I said goodbye to Father Chris Bowles, promising myself to try and tread lightly, or lightlier, on the planet, and return to my desk to think about the sorry state the world finds itself in. But that's an easy thing to do, while sitting in a centrally heated office before whizzing home on a carbon-fueled scooter to a household full of domestic appliances that make everyday life so much easier at the switch of a button. It really isn't much of an effort at all to switch off a few lights and set the heating at 1 degree less than usual. Because it's true that climate change affects us all, but not all equally. And that's the banner of the Irish charity Trokerers Lenten campaign that highlights the fact that right now it's the communities in the developing world who are really struggling to survive harsh and unpredictable weather conditions. And what's more, it announces, you can help those least able to cope. I decided to find out more and got in touch with the director, Justin Kilcullen, who began by telling me exactly what Trokera is.
Trokera is the agency of the Irish Bishops' Conference charged with the responsibility for channeling support from the Irish Church to the neediest parts of the world and also at home here in Ireland to run programs in schools and through parishes and other fora that highlights for people the causes of poverty and oppression in the world and the responsibilities that we as Irish citizens have to take action on those issues. So we're 35 years old this year, marking our 35th anniversary with our Lenten campaign, which is our flagship project each year. And this year we're looking at the question of climate change and its impact on the poorest peoples in the world.
I came across your campaign on the internet and saw it's dedicated to climate change. Why?
Well, I think climate change is now something that everyone is aware of. It's in all our interests to look after the planet, particularly in terms of coming generations. And I think whether we live in the rich part or the poor part of the world, this is something that is exercising us all. However, what we want to point out to people, particularly here in Ireland, is that while climate change is affecting everybody, it does not affect everybody equally. And while we might be worrying about the future, the impact of climate change today is being felt in a very real and damaging way in the poorest parts of the world. And we've focused on Kenya as one example of that, on the people of Turkana, who are seeing their livelihoods being slowly but surely eroded as the climate changes year by year, and ways they had to cope and to live and to make a living have now become almost untenable. And if things go on as they are, will indeed become untenable, and a whole way of life will disappear. So for us in the wealthy part of the world, our main issues in Ireland last year, for instance, were that it was a rainy summer and where could we go for our holidays? But for people living on the edge of the economy, on the edge of livelihoods as they are in the poorest countries, this is not just a question of comfort. It is actually a question of their actual survival as people, as ethnic groups, as nations. And I think that we don't recognize yet in the wealthy countries the sense of urgency around this issue.
Now, in what way can those who do adhere to your Lenten campaign help those in developing countries? What are you asking them to do?
Well, we have a number of ways in which people can take action. Of course, Trokera in its work is supporting the poorer communities in the developing world, in the 37 countries in which we operate, to cope with the impact of climate change. But we also, through this campaign, want people to become aware of the issue and of our responsibilities towards it. I mean, in Ireland, it's a sad thing to say, but we are the second worst polluter in terms of our carbon footprint in the European Union. We are the fifth highest polluter in the world on per capita terms, in terms of our carbon emissions. I think this fact has come as a shock to a lot of Irish people who, over the years, we have lived, in a sense, on our tourist image of a green country with fresh running streams and beautiful mountains that people can come and enjoy kind of the wildness of Ireland. But the reality is that underneath that image is a country that is inflicting significant damage on the developing world through the lack of our engagement in this issue. So we want people to be aware of that and to raise it with their political representatives. And we have a number of ways people can do that, whether it's online, using our website, using postcards, writing to their local papers, and creating a sense of awareness throughout Lent that this is something that is not just to do with Ireland and our future, but with the future of particularly the developing world. And of course, we ask people to contribute to our campaign in terms of donations, because this is our major fundraiser of the year. And Irish people have been extraordinarily generous over the years. We hope to bring in over 12 million euro this year. And that is the basis on which we work. That gives us our seed money. We also receive other donations throughout the year from the public, and then we are supported by government. But without the Lenten campaign, which is at the heart of Trokra, we would not be able to do this work and to bring these issues to the public's attention.
I know we're just at the beginning of Lent, but are people beginning to respond? As you were saying, people have become very aware of the urgency to fight climate change.
Well, we have the Trokra Lenten box, and in many countries there is a Lenten campaign, and many of the organizations use this box. We call it the Lenten Fast Box, and it represents the campaign in terms of the image that is on it and some of the issues that are on in very short kind of bullet points. And we ask people to have this box in their house throughout Lent, and whatever it is they are doing for Lent in terms of the traditional practices of giving up some a luxury, or in other ways we do it now by perhaps cutting down on our food or cutting down on alcohol or smoking and so on, and that we turn these small acts of mortification into a real positive act for change by putting the money in the box that is saved through whatever it is that we're doing. And that's where the money comes from. And it does amount up to, as I say, in the course of the 6 weeks, to 12 million euro. And we will be receiving that money through the parishes and the dioceses in the weeks following Lent. So we can say it's already happening. It's just that we don't have the money yet. But I do have my own box at home. And there could be more in it than there is now, but and that's often what happens. But people do make the effort, particularly coming to the end of Lent, and they put the money in and they bring it back to their school or their parish church. And that is how we will carry out the program for the coming year.
Now, I've been looking at the websites of many parishes and Christian associations, and I've noticed that a vast majority focus on climate change for Lent. Do you think this is because the church has voiced its concern and is urging the faithful to do their part in protecting creation?
Well, I think that of all the kind of institutions in our society, particularly in, say, in Europe, the church has a record on this that goes back through to biblical times, so to speak, which indeed predates the church. But always in our teaching we've had from the very beginning as children, when we learned about the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve being sent out and being told to care for the earth and to make their living and so on. I mean, I think there has been an awareness of the whole concept of creation, that it's a gift from God, that we are stewards of it. And perhaps we haven't had the ideas highlighted about our abuse of this great gift. But we do have a sense of it. And I think, therefore, people who have a Christian view of life and who live the faith, I think, can adapt very readily and understand very readily what the issues are here. That it's not just economy and it's not just politics, but it's to do with the very fundamental existence of, you know, creation and us as part of creation. So I think there is a very ready understanding amongst church people, and therefore I think the church is well positioned to speak out, and I think will be listened to by those of faith and those of no faith. In fact, I've seen references to that in what we might call the secular media, who are welcoming, you know, church statements on this issue, because so many times in terms of political statements, while we obviously want our governments to respond, there can be an air of skepticism about, well, this is the latest fashion and members of parliament and ministers will climb on board this because people are interested in it, but they'll move on when the issue moves on. And I think the church does have, as I say, both a track record and an authenticity to speak and to challenge, and that society will listen.
Absolutely. But you did mention politics and economics, which are two other main factors in the issue. It seems to me that most people, including our politicians, are convinced that it's vital to take action now. But it's economically that we haven't caught up, in the sense that the necessary changes to industry and consumerism haven't yet been made. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I think it is extraordinary how this issue has suddenly emerged in the last 2 years, really, as if we never saw it coming. And but of course, we have seen it coming. We just didn't. We chose to ignore it, because something as dramatic as the impact of the of our industrial life and all that goes with it on the environment. I mean, given that it has taken decades to actually build up to this, we can't really say that we didn't know it was coming. It's just that we have been, I suppose, self-centered and selfish in the way we've looked at this. And it's only when it has become apparent that this is going to damage our own societies that it got the sense of urgency about it. So I think, obviously, politics and economics at the heart of everything that we do. I suppose those two things are the way in which we structure society, how we live together and how we relate as communities, either nationally or internationally. And yes, I think politicians have recognized the issue. The United Nations, through its various expert committees and bodies, have been highlighting it. But yet we see that the decisions that are taken around the Kyoto Protocol, the need for a follow-up to the Kyoto Protocol, the particular positions adopted by certain countries, I suppose the United States comes to mind, but it's not alone. I think Australia has also been very slow, shows that despite the logic and despite the understanding, that other issues seem to take precedence, and that, you know, the radical action that is required hasn't been taken. So I think there is a lot to be done yet in terms of creating a real constituency for responsible action on climate change, because ultimately politicians are answerable to the people, and if they feel the people will punish them for lack of action, then they will take action.
Can I ask you a personal question? What are your hopes for the planet?
Well, I was a little bit shocked a couple of years ago when listening to a talk on this issue, someone said, you know, we are the first generation to hand on the planet in worse state than we inherited it. And I felt a very kind of depressing sense of responsibility about this, quite apart from my own lifestyle, which, you know, I am striving with my wife and my children to change. But I mean, I drive a car and my wife drives a car because we need it for our different activities, and we're in that kind of a rut, so to speak. This is the way we've been brought up to expect these things. And I am now in my middle 50s, and I realize I'm part of the generation that is largely responsible for where we've got to. So my hope is that I can change, that people of my age and those coming behind me can change, and that we can do something to put that situation right, so that my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren will have a world that is sustainable, and that they will have a lifestyle that will be in harmony with that, and that will guarantee that life will go on into the future.
We are the first generation to hand on the planet in a worse state than we inherited it. Isn't that what Father Chris Bowles was saying earlier on, when he said, the earth is not ours to ruin? It's something we have been given, that we hold in trust, that we look after for the next generation. And he continued, we're expected by God to hand it on in as good or better shape than we received it. And that's not happening.